Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nuclear Matters at CIL, a series of podcasts brought to you by the Nuclear Law and Policy Team at the Center for International Law, or CIL. Today's podcast is the second in a two-part podcast that will cover nuclear power development and the International Atomic Energy Agency's, or the IAEA, milestones approach. I am Nivedita. Together with Denise Cheong, we will be joined in conversation by our special guest, Mr. Anthony Kenneth Stott. Mr. Stott will provide an overview of assistance provided by the IAEA to its member states considering deploying nuclear power, as well as the application of the IAEA milestones approach. Mr. Stott is an international expert on nuclear power infrastructure development, environmental protection, and stakeholder engagement. He provides consulting services to the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, and international NGOs. Mr. Stott was a former operational lead in the Nuclear Infrastructure Development Section of the IAEA Division of Nuclear Power, Department of Nuclear Energy. He was a team leader for the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review Missions, or INR, mission to several countries embarking on new nuclear power programs, led national workshops and expert missions on environmental impact assessment and stakeholder engagement, as well as lectured at inter-regional training courses on nuclear infrastructure development topics. So Anthony, can you tell us in what ways can the IAEA assist member states that are considering deploying nuclear power in accordance with the milestones approach?
Libby, the IAEA has various means by which they can assist member states. And they start even before the milestones approach, or before the country enters into phase one of the milestones approach. The country would need to do energy planning studies. And the IAEA can assist member states in building their energy planning capabilities. And that's not specific for nuclear power. The IAEA has software and energy planning models that look at energy planning across the whole spectrum, regardless of what the source of the energy is, you know, whether it's renewable energy or nuclear or hydro. So IAEA can assist member states in doing their energy planning. And in fact, IAEA provides that software to the member states so that they can do it themselves. And that helps them to make decisions about whether nuclear power should even be considered as an option in their energy mix. For many countries, they will do those energy planning studies and decide, well, at this point in time, they're not going to include nuclear energy as an option. Or they might say, yes, it looks good to us, so we'd want to go into investigate it in more detail and really make sure that it is something that the country wants to do. So that's in terms of the energy planning studies. Now, after the milestones approach was published, member states request additional guidance on how to assess their progress in developing the infrastructure needed for their nuclear power program. So in 2009, the IAEA published a dedicated methodology that can help countries to assess the development of the national infrastructure. And that was for each of the phases. In fact, in 2009, the IAEA developed the methodology only for phase one and phase two. And that was revised in 2016. In fact, after the revision of the milestones approach in 2015, then the methodology itself was updated to take into account whatever changes there were in the milestones approach. So the evaluation methodology initially was only phase two and three, and then it was extended to it was initially only in phase one and phase two, and then it was extended to phase three, to cover phase three as well, and was tested during an inner phase three mission to the United Arab Emirates in 2018 and to Belarus in earlier this year, in fact, in the beginning of 2020. And all countries are encouraged to, all countries considering nuclear power are encouraged to use that methodology because it can be used to do a self-evaluation as well. So the country does not have to wait for the IEA to come and do a review using that methodology. The country can do a self-evaluation on where they are. And in fact, the IEA encourages them to do a self-evaluation and develop a national action plan to close out any gaps that they identify. And then after that, to request the IEA to come and do a full inner mission with experts from around the world. So in fact, the IEA, through its nuclear infrastructure development section, organizes support missions to help a country with their self-evaluation. Support missions, first of all, to help them understand the methodology. And then once they have done an initial self-evaluation and prepared a report, the IEA will go to the country, perhaps with two IEA internal experts and one or two international experts, and look at what the country has done and said, well, yes, you've applied the methodology well, and you have written a good report that can be used as the basis for a full integrated nuclear infrastructure review mission. Or they might identify that there are gaps where the country can improve the self-evaluation report before they request the, or before they host the full inner mission. So let me talk a little bit about the inner mission itself. That is offered in each of the three phases. So you will have an inner mission specific for phase one, a different one specific for phase two, and a third type for phase three. So it depends on the status of development of the country. And it covers all 19 infrastructure issues. So what the integrated nuclear infrastructure review mission does, it takes the methodology, and if I use phase one as an example, there are about 35 conditions that have been specified that cover all 19 infrastructure issues. And the IEA review mission will go in and look at how those conditions been met in phase one. And the benefit to the country is of this methodology that it's an opportunity for the country to evaluate the nuclear power program on the basis of the milestones approach, because there's a one-to-one correlation between the evaluation methodology and the milestones approach. It helps the country to identify areas that require additional work. But beyond that, it also helps the countries it provides a forum for peer discussion, exchange of experiences on infrastructure development. So when the IEA goes in with a team of IEA experts and international experts to do a review mission, that in itself is a forum that helps the country helps the sharing and exchange of information, because the international experts are there based on their own personal experience of the work that they have done in their own countries or in other countries. So it certainly also helps the member state to increase the understanding of the required infrastructure amongst all the national stakeholders. So the IEA encourages the member state, when they host an IEA mission, that it's not a small team of people who engages with the review team, but rather all the representatives from all stakeholders that are involved in the nuclear power program are involved in that review mission. So it helps to broaden the understanding of the required infrastructure. And then the report from such an inner mission using that methodology is made available to senior officials in the host country, normally a minister or even a prime minister. In some countries, even the president is given the formal report from the inner mission. So,
Anthony, if I may.
Yes, please.
From the perspective of a neighboring country, it would seem to me that these peer review missions could also be seen as a sort of confidence building mechanism, because I think you mentioned earlier in the context of the earlier questions that we discussed that these missions comprises of experts from IAEA as well as internationally recognized experts. So it would seem to me that it's well suited as a mechanism to help build confidence. I'm just wondering if you'd like to comment on that.
Denise, I think you're absolutely correct in that. It is a mechanism to build confidence within the country itself, amongst the stakeholders, other government ministries, other decision-making bodies, as well as the public, that the country is, if they're in phase one and they're considering whether they should continue with the nuclear power program, whether they have addressed all the right issues to be able to make a proper decision of what the IAEA calls a knowledgeable decision to go forward with the nuclear power program. But of course, that can only happen if the country publishes but it's easier to do that if the country publishes the report of the inner mission. A lot of countries are very open to say that the inner mission is taking place, that the IAEA has put together a team of IAEA and international experts, and they're coming into the country to do a review of the status of the nuclear infrastructure in the country. So that in itself is good. But then the IAEA encourages the member states that once they have the official report from such a mission, such a review mission, that they publish that report. That increases the confidence within the country, but it goes beyond that. It also increases the confidence of the international community that the country is approaching this, the development of the nuclear infrastructure in a logical manner, but more importantly, in a safe, or in a manner that will ensure safety, security, that they adhere to safeguard the peaceful uses of nuclear energy. And they're considering all the aspects that the milestone approach indicates that they should consider. And let me add one thing to that about the international conference as well. The IAEA often gets requests from countries, not only the neighboring countries around a member state, but even further afield. They said, okay, we've heard that this country wants to consider nuclear power. Are they engaging with you, the IAEA? Are they following the milestones approach? Will they request an inner mission? Will they make the report public? So the IAEA gets quite a few requests from countries further afield who are interested in nuclear power and interested in trying to ensure that nuclear power, if it is developed, is done in a safe, secure, and a peaceful manner, and that it's sustainable for the country. if I may continue, so I talked about the inner mission and using this methodology that the country can use either to do a self-evaluation and then later on can request a full inner mission with all the experts from the IAEA and international experts. And that helps the country to update any national action plan through the recommendations, suggestions that are included in the report from the inner mission, that the country can update the national action plan to address any gaps. Through addressing the recommendations and suggestions, they can close any gaps in their nuclear infrastructure. But at some point, I think we mentioned what the duration is for each phase of the milestones approach. So phase one, phase two, and phase three. And the inner mission would take place sort of close to the end of each phase. And the period in between those inner missions could be quite long. So there's two other aspects where the IEA provides support. The one aspect is to work with the country to develop what the IEA calls an integrated work plan, which provides a framework for defining what IEA assistance there can be to support the national activities. And let me emphasize that the IEA will not go and do the work for a country. That's up to, the IEA is not a consulting organization, but it can help to support the country, it can support the country in identifying what are the gaps through the inner missions, and then can support the country through development and through training to help them identify or to build, first of all, competence and to further their understanding of what the infrastructure requirements are and what they need to do. So this integrated work plan is developed normally after the first inner mission. It is developed between the IEA staff from the different departments of the IEA and the country representatives from different government departments, also the nuclear regulator, that will identify where can the IEA support the country. And it identifies activities such as training courses, workshops, scientific visits to another country that's got more experience in developing the infrastructure or in operating nuclear power plants. And that covers all of the 19 infrastructure issues where there were identified to be gaps in the countries. The IEA can also offer what they call expert missions to review documents or procedures against the IEA safety standards or security requirements or safeguard requirements. So, for example, the IEA can offer an expert mission to go and review the regulations and the regulatory framework that a country has started to develop when they get into phase two of the mild sense approach and compare that against IEA safety standards and whether those would meet the intent of the IEA safety standards. In areas where there are not specific standards, for example, in safeguards or in security, there's certainly requirements there. And again, the IEA can go into a review mission to identify is what the country developing in line with those requirements. And there are other areas where the IEA doesn't have specific requirements, but they've got guidance in what the country should be looking at. And perhaps I can give an example of that. For environmental protection, there's guidance documents of what the country should consider. Or, for example, for the nuclear fuel cycle, there'll be guidance documents on what the country should consider. And again, the IEA can go into an expert mission to review what the country has already done against those guidance documents and give them advice and help them there. Perhaps I should also say that the IEA's Department of Technical Cooperation is the main mechanism for the delivery of these supporting activities, these IEA supporting services to the embarking member states. Perhaps just quickly some other things. There's a lot of publications that the IEA develops, both safety standards and other guidance on all the 19 infrastructure issues. There's something that's called the Nuclear Infrastructure Bibliography that is on the IEA website. So member states can access all of that, all of those publications. They can download them if they wish. Those are all available. The IEA offers human resource competency building. They can help with reviewing what the legal and regulatory frameworks are. So they can provide advisory services to a country as well. They can also do follow-up in a mission. So we mentioned that an inner mission is likely to take place near the end of a phase, so near the end of phase one. But then there's a long period before the country gets close to the end of phase two. And sometimes that could be, you know, as long as 5, 6, 7, maybe even 10 years. So the IA can also offer, and in fact, the IA encourages member states to request a follow-up mission. To request a follow-up mission after the main intermission. And a follow-up mission is a smaller team of IA experts and international experts, perhaps only 4 people, that will go to the country and review what progress they've made in closing out the recommendations or suggestions that were made in the intermission. So they won't develop any new recommendations, suggestions. That team will just look at what the country has done to close out the recommendations, suggestions from the previous intermission. And member states have informed the IA that that's also very helpful to them to have this independent review of how well they are addressing any gaps that were developed, how well they're addressing or closing out, completing their national action plans to improve their nuclear power infrastructure. Remember, there's 2 areas that perhaps I should mention as well. Let me start with the legal framework. So the IEA does have an Office of Legal Affairs, and there are experts in that office on nuclear law, specifically nuclear law. And they will also provide support to countries to help them to develop the right legal framework for a nuclear power program. So the IEA Office of Legal Affairs will do workshops in a country at the country's request. They will go there and do workshops with various stakeholders in the country to explain to them what is meant by a nuclear legal framework and what components should be in it. We mentioned at some stage nuclear safety, nuclear security, the peaceful uses or nuclear safeguards, as well as liability. So the IA talks about a comprehensive nuclear law that covers all of those aspects. And of course, it would also need to establish the mandate for a nuclear regulatory body. It would need to establish who has the prime responsibility for nuclear safety and things like that. So the IA does provide workshops to help a country to understand what should be covered by a comprehensive nuclear law. The IA has what they also call the Nuclear Law Institute, which is a course that was run by the IEA, often in conjunction with other institutes, over a period of about 2 weeks, where, for example, 20 participants from various countries normally from the legal part of the countries will come, and over a 2-week period, they will be follow a course on what should be in the nuclear law in the country. So that's the Nuclear Law Institute. And then when a country does draft its nuclear law, the IEA also offers a review service and an advisory service to review what is in that draft and advise the country whether it is comprehensive and whether it follows the guidance that is provided by the IAEA. Often the country will send its draft documents to the IEA in Vienna. The IEA would have it reviewed either by its own experts or by international experts who are familiar with nuclear law. And then they would go to the country and hold an expert mission with the country to give them their findings, to advise them of how it can be improved. The IA recognizes that each country has its own way of creating its legal framework. I mean, the legal frameworks are not identical from country to country. So while the IA provides recommendations, it does recognize that each country may do it slightly differently. But the IA wants to try and ensure that the elements that are needed for a comprehensive nuclear law are in some way or other covered by what the country is proposing. So that's one way through the Office of Legal Affairs that the IEA can help. The IEA also has what we call integrated nuclear infrastructure training courses. And those are courses also over a period of 1 or 2 or sometimes even 3 weeks, so that can either cover nuclear infrastructure from a general perspective. So again, about 20 participants from different newcomer countries would be nominated by their country to participate in such a training course, and it would give the broad spectrum of what nuclear infrastructure is and how should it be developed. The training course could be more specific about a specific aspect of nuclear infrastructure development, for example, stakeholder involvement or environmental protection, or the regulatory framework that needs to be developed, a national position, how to develop that. But the same format is used, that the country will nominate representatives to participate in those workshops, those training courses, and then approximately 20 would be accepted and the course would be conducted. Some of those training courses are conducted in Vienna, but most often they're conducted in a host country, where a country offers to host the workshop, provides a facility, provides some of the lecturers, not all of them, but some of them, and then also that enables the country to have some of its own people participating. So this is done by countries such as the USA, the Russian Federation, the Republic of Korea, Japan, Finland. There are other countries that offer to host these integrated nuclear infrastructure training workshops or training courses. The advantage of doing it in the country and not at the IEA itself in Vienna is that the participants can then, on the one hand, the country can share more of the experience of what it has done to develop its nuclear infrastructure and how it is perhaps operating nuclear power plants. But often it also enables the participants to go and visit facilities, either a nuclear power plant that is operating or other perhaps manufacturing facilities or radioactive waste management facilities, disposal facilities. So it is a good way in which the experience that countries are operating these nuclear facilities can share then with the newcomer countries or the representatives from the newcomer countries.
Okay, moving on to our next question, Anthony, you've given us a very good understanding of the function of the milestones approach, but I think it's right to say that at its very core, it is, at the end of the day, a program management guide, as you described it. And I think it's important to remember that this guide is in no way legally binding. So this leads me to my next question, which is, given that the milestones approach has been around, as you say, for more than a decade, has it become the norm for embarking countries to follow this approach? And of interest to us, if we could bring it down to the region, how good have we been as a region in terms of adhering to the milestones approach? I wonder if you could comment.
Denise?
What the experience at the IEA has been is that
all the countries that are actively considering or embarking on nuclear power, introducing it for the first time in their country, are following the milestones approach. So there are approximately 30 countries in that category at the moment. In fact, I think at this moment there's probably only 28. The number varies from year to year, but all of them are following the milestones approach. And they're in different phases. So most of them are in phase one, a few in phase two, and even smaller number in phase three. And the obvious ones in phase three are the United Arab Emirates, Bangladesh, Turkey, Egypt, and Belarus. And I think that's well known. So yes, all the countries are following the milestones approach, which means that they are all, have gone into phase one. They've done the studies. If they've progressed beyond phase one, then phase two, they've created the legal framework. They've set up the nuclear law. They've started to develop their nuclear regulator and the regulations, started to do siting studies, and also started, continue to engage with different stakeholders. Specifically in Southeast Asia, I think there are 11 countries in Southeast Asia, but of those, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam have actively started nuclear programs sometime in the past. They're not all continuing. They've all of those countries that I mentioned have requested intermissions. So Indonesia had an intermission in 2009. I think that's well known. Malaysia had one in 2016, and I was part of the team that did the one in Malaysia. The Philippines is the most recent. It had an intermission in 2018, and I was part of that mission. Thailand in 2010, and those were all phase one intermissions. Vietnam was the country that had progressed the furthest. They had a phase one intermission in 2009. They had a phase two intermission because they went into phase two in 2012. And then they had a follow-up mission. They requested a follow-up mission in 2014. But not all of them have continued their nuclear power program. So they all followed the milestones approach, but they've made different decisions about whether they continue or not. So Thailand, as I said, had an intermission in 2010, but at this stage, they are not continue with the nuclear power program. My understanding is that it's not part of their energy, the national energy plan anymore. It was originally, but it's not part of their latest energy plan. Vietnam and Malaysia both decided to suspend their nuclear programs for various reasons. So really, it's only in the Southeast Asia itself, it's only Indonesia and the Philippines that are continuing. And the Philippines, as I said, had an intermission in 2018. They've had follow-up discussions with the IAEA on some of the actions they need to do. And that's perhaps one thing that I need to go back on a bit later on, something else that the IAEA does to support these countries. But I'll come back to that later. Indonesia is still considering nuclear power, but they are considering an experimental nuclear power program as the initial phase, and their government has not yet made a decision on whether to go ahead or not. Perhaps I should add that the Philippines, recently the IAEA had its general conference in Vienna, and they announced there that they, I think it was in July this year, that they issued an executive order to create a bigger nuclear energy program interagency committee. I think early on I said the government needs to create some sort of mechanism that they could coordinate it. The Philippines had that previously, but it was a fairly limited had a limited number of members, and they then have now created one with a much wider representation from other government departments. And that committee has got the task to continue the study of the feasibility of introducing a nuclear power plant and to formulate a national position. So that's where the Philippines is at the moment. Indonesia has said it concentrated on a experimental nuclear power plant, but they haven't made any further decisions, as far as I know, on going ahead with the nuclear power program. Two other countries that are not in Southeast Asia itself, but may be of interest. And obviously, one is Bangladesh. That is in phase three. They've already started construction of their nuclear power plants. They are constructing. So that work's already done. And then Sri Lanka has also indicated that they are interested in nuclear power. And they, I know, have been working with the IEA to identify what they need to do to follow the milestones approach. And they are likely to also request an intermission at some stage. I'm not sure if they've already requested it, but what I understand is they are likely to request an intermission. So those countries are also following the milestones approach. And Bangladesh has had a number of intermissions and follow-up intermissions, as well as other peer review missions from the IEA. So they are also working closely with the IEA.
So thank you very much, Anthony, for that very comprehensive update. It's certainly very heartening to know that as a region, we're not only following the IEA milestones approach, but the take-up rate for INEAM missions it is high. And I wonder whether you could make a quick comment on whether people are sharing these INEAM mission reports. Is that something you're able to...
Yes.
You'd like to comment on?
Some of them certainly have. So I know the Philippines, that their INEAM mission was in December 2018. And their report is now publicly available on the IEA website and maybe also on a website of the Department of Energy in the Philippines. I'm not sure about that, but certainly it is publicly available on the IEA website. The other countries, as far as I know, have not published their inner emissions reports.
The IEA does encourage them to publish.
And as I say, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've actually done more than encourage them. We've gone the next, so it was next step to say that we will, or the IEA will publish, unless the country asks that for whatever reason any publication is delayed.
What the IEA has seen for some of the countries that have not agreed to publish, they haven't said they won't publish at all.
They've just asked the IEA not to publish until the country indicates they are ready to have it as public. I'm not sure of the reasoning for that, but the countries will have their different reasons for asking for a delay in publication.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to know, statistically, since the introduction of that practice of if you don't say no, then we're going to publish it. It'd be interesting to know, if that's resulted in more reports being made public.
It's difficult to say that, with any surety, but I think the drive that the IEA has to try and enhance transparency has certainly, I think, resulted in more countries being willing to make their reports published. They see other countries doing it, and I think they're asking themselves, well, why shouldn't we make our report public? One of the countries that I worked quite a lot with, and I led the inner mission and a follow-up mission to, was Ghana. And Ghana has been very open that they are exploring nuclear power. So every month they put out a newsletter to a lot of different stakeholders in the country, as well as internationally, of what they're doing with the nuclear power program, what stage they've got to. So when they... after we had the first intermission, the phase one intermission, they published it in their monthly newsletter. They said was what some of the findings were. So they were very transparent. And so they were very open to publish their inner reports on the IEA website. And we see that with a lot of other countries where we have done, where the IEA did do intermissions in the last 2 or 3 years, that their reports were also published.
Thank you. And now turning to our last question, and we're circling back now to the points that Nivi made right at the very outset, where the drivers for nuclear power deployment. We've seen energy security being one, the transition to clean energy being the other. And as a result of these drivers, we're seeing innovation in terms of nuclear technology. And we've talked about small modular reactors. And then there's also other types of advanced reactors. Now, with these sorts of technological innovations, how would deployment of such new technologies, Anthony, sit with the IAEA milestones approach, which was in a way developed for your more traditional type of land-based nuclear power plant? We talked about earlier on about the three phases and the number of years it takes. Potentially, with some of these new reactors, we could be seeing far shorter lead times. So I'm just wondering if it'd be nice to hear your thoughts on this.
Denise, you're absolutely right. When they developed the milestones approach, the IA really, and the international experts who were involved, really considered land-based large-size nuclear reactors, nuclear power plants, as the basis. And so there has been a number of studies or evaluations within the IAEA to determine is the methodologies, the milestones approach, applicable for other technologies as well. And the conclusions that they've come up to is yes. So, for example, there was a version of the milestones approach that has been developed for research reactors, nuclear research reactors. So that already exists. And there obviously are some differences that a research reactor doesn't supply electricity. So the infrastructure issue on electrical grid would not be part of that methodology for a research reactor. But virtually all the others are also applicable. You still need to have a national position of whether you're going to use nuclear energy, maybe not to generate electricity, but to have a research reactor still needs to be part of a national decision. You still need the nuclear safety, nuclear security, nuclear safeguards issues. You still have nuclear fuel and radioactive waste to manage. Even a research reactor still needs some form of emergency planning. So what we found is that all the infrastructure issues are still applicable, albeit to perhaps in some cases to a different degree. The amount of human resource competence you need for a research reactor is not the same as what you need for a nuclear power plant, which is a much bigger undertaking. So then when you look at smaller modular reactors, again, the same is true, that each of the 19 infrastructure issues is still relevant, but the way in which a country might address the infrastructure issue might be slightly different. So a number of regulators are looking at, do you need the same emergency planning zone or the same emergency planning actions if you've got a small modular reactor compared to a large light water reactor? So the way that they might address the requirements for emergency planning might be slightly different. Or the way they address some of the siting requirements might be slightly different. But that's, to a large extent, a national decision and the national regulations. What the IAEA is doing, they've done some evaluations, and in fact, they've got another technical meeting happening later this year, where they're bringing some countries together that have been involved in considering small and modular reactors and looking at the milestones approach and what are the actual things that a country might address differently. So as I say, all the 19 infrastructure issues are still valid, but the way that they get addressed might be slightly different. And they're looking at to see, well, what guidance could be given to a country to do that. There's another aspect to it that I think we need to also mention. Security, for example, the security requirements might be slightly different. Again, depending on the design of the SMR, the country needs to look at, well, what regulations does it have in place? Are those regulations appropriate for an SMR? And how do they need to address it? The IAEA is also looking at its nuclear safety standards and requirements, that it has in place at the moment. Are they also applicable for SMRs? In general, they are applicable. I think that there's definitely consensus in that. But they're looking to say, well, are there any aspects of that need to be adapted or modified to make them more applicable to SMRs? But broadly speaking, the milestones approach is applicable for SMRs. For advanced reactors, it would probably be also applicable for the micro reactors that some designers are considering. It's certainly applicable for research reactors. Again, not all the conditions might be appropriate, so the country needs to see what is appropriate and how do they address the infrastructure issues.
It would seem to me then the phases would be potentially a lot shorter, right? Moving from phase one to phase two to phase three.
It's interesting you say that, Denise, because I think that's what a lot of the countries have also said, that surely if they're going to do SMR technology rather than the large light water reactor technology, that they could move through the phases a lot quicker. The studies that probably phase one would be the same, the amount of studies they need to do to make the decision to go forward or not. And a lot of the work that they need to do in phase two, establishing the comprehensive nuclear law, the regulator and all the regulations, doing the EIA, all of that would probably be the same. But certainly in the construction phase, it should be a lot faster to construct a nuclear power plant if it's an SMR, and to start the operation of the first modules, because that's one of the advantages of the SMRs, that you can add modules on later on as the need for additional electricity generation capacity becomes evident in the country. Mm-hmm. So yes, instead of the 10 to 15 years that the IEA milestones approach says it's going to take a country to go from start to actually commission and operate a nuclear power plant, it could be 4 or 5 years shorter for an SMR.
Thank you for that. It's been a great conversation, Anthony. Thank you so much for making the time to be with us. And thank you very much for the very many helpful and interesting insights that you shared.
It was my pleasure, Denise and Lily. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to Nuclear Matters at CIL. This concludes our two-part podcast on nuclear power development and the IAEA milestones approach. Have a great day.